This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. And let's start with politics and the vast field of Democrats running for president, 18 of them at the moment, and more are expected as a number of folks are moving closer to a decision on whether to run or not. Among them, Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton, who's been visiting key battleground states, Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, and who joins us now from Salem. Congressman Moulton, great to have you back on Radio Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here, Anthony.
So let me start. We'll just get this out of the way. Are you going to run for president? What do you think?
I'm making a decision by the end of the month. So my wife and I have been talking about it the last couple of days. I've been visiting early primary states. The people on the ground have been very encouraging, but ultimately this is a decision that I have to make about how best to serve the country.
And in terms of making that decision, what are the key factors? I mean, is it money? As you mentioned, you've been talking with your wife. Is it a family consideration about whether you really want to put them through that? Or is it about really convincing yourself that you're the guy for the job?
Well, of course there are family considerations, and you have to make sure the team is ready and all of that. But fundamentally for me, this is a question of how I can best serve the country. You know, in 2003, it was to serve in the Marines in Iraq. Even in the midst of a war I disagreed with, I felt that was the best way I could serve. In 2014, it was to take on an incumbent and try to make Congress a bit better. And ultimately, it will come down to that question today. Is the best way I can serve the country in this incredibly divisive time to run or to just stay in my seat in Congress?
You know, one of the important issues for Democrats face, and this pops up a lot when you talk to people, when you talk to voters, you see it in the polling, and that is an ability to defeat Donald Trump. That's what a lot of Democratic voters say they want in their candidate. And anyone who ends up running against President Trump is going to have to contend with his sort of buzzsaw of attacks, playing loose with the truth, and quite honestly, the way he's a master at controlling the terms of the debate. How do you counter that? If you were going to run, what's the best way to run against Trump?
Well, it's a great question because I think a lot of Democrats haven't figured that out. First of all, you just got to be tough. You got to be persistent. You know, I think it's dangerous to put a candidate up who, you know, that might be the toughest thing that he or she's ever done in their life. So you got to have someone who knows how to be resilient and keep fighting. But more specifically, when I think about taking on Trump, you know, I think about when he was, tweeting about how this is the greatest witch hunt in political history or something like that. And, you know, my response to that on Twitter was, as a representative of Salem, Massachusetts, I can assure you this is false. And the point is, you have to acknowledge Trump. You have to be dismissive of him. You have to move quickly past to what we need to do for the country to grow the economy, to make sure that people have access to healthcare everywhere, to reinvest in infrastructure and national security. But you can't just totally ignore Trump. You have to put him in his place. I think that's the right balance that Democrats need to find.
Yeah, and a tricky balance, no doubt. Let me ask you about one other thing. I am going to move on to other subjects, but just while we're talking about this, you've always said, Congressman Moulton, the Democrats need to embrace a new generation of leadership, and you make the point that you represent that new generation. Interesting, though, that in this big field of Democrats, there are some guys that represent this generation that you're talking about. I'm thinking of your fellow Congressman Tim Ryan now, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who's probably going to be announcing this weekend. So what would you be adding to this field in terms of, you know, that new generational voice?
Well, so far I'm the only one who's even talking about national security, and I think that's important that people need to look to the future commander-in-chief and say, all right, this is someone who can make decisions about life or death, who understands the stakes. This is a time when we've had a historically, truly the most reckless commander-in-chief in American history. But you also have to come through with important ideas, and that's why I spent so much time on the ground listening to people about how they're struggling to get health care. I just talked to a remarkable case today about how broken our immigration system is. A person right in our community whose family is being torn apart. We need to fix these things right here home in America. We also need to offer some leadership for the world. We need to put forward someone who can stand up for what America is all about, a moral case for our leadership that's been so squandered by this administration.
Well, you mentioned, I believe you're referring to the case of Maria Morita, who you met with earlier today. Now, she's an immigrant from Guatemala who has a final order of removal from U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement for entering the country illegally in 1994. She's been living in a Boston-area church to avoid ICE. What did you take away from visiting with her?
First of all, the case is absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, this is a woman who did not come here to take anyone's job. She fought for her life. And still, to this day, you know, over 20 years after she came to America, she receives death threats on Facebook. So if she goes back to Guatemala, if that's what America does to her, she may very well die. There's no part of that that's upholding our values. Stripping her away from her kids, sending her to a country where she's likely to get killed, where she's received death threats. It just points out how broken our immigration system is. And this is something I've seen countless times in the district. It's something I saw when I went down to the border. We do have an immigration problem. We do have to address what's going on at the southern border. I'm not a Democrat who's going to pretend that it's not happening. But I am someone who believes that we ought to uphold our values in what we do. And that means fundamentally reforming the system. It means giving a pathway to citizenship for people like Maria who are in our communities, who are part of our community, whose families would be ripped apart if she were to be deported. It means making sure that Boston can get the high-tech workers from abroad that we need, that businesses demand. It means taking care of dreamers, kids who came here with not even a knowledge that they were coming to America when they were so little, brought here by their parents and who have grown up as essentially American citizens with just a little piece of paperwork missing. It means addressing the fact that we have deported veterans. Deported veterans, I mean, that's a term that shouldn't even exist. And yet, we're doing that. We're doing that to people who have served this country honorably, get in a little bit of trouble, just don't have their paperwork in order, and they get sent overseas.
And yet,
that is wrong.
And yet, you know, I'm sure that most people listening agree with everything you just said. And yet we seem to continue. We continue to have this log jam in Washington between Republicans and Democrats to reform this system. What's the key to breaking that log jam?
Well, it's actually getting some people in Washington who are willing to tackle this tough problem because it's politically fraught. You know, a lot of Democrats don't like to admit that. We do have a problem with drugs coming across the southern border, and we do have a problem with historic numbers of people seeking asylum from Central America. I mean, this is a challenge. We have to be honest about that, be honest, have the courage to just be honest about the facts here. But it also means on the other side of the aisle that Republicans have to stop supporting an administration that's putting kids in cages, that's taking kids away from their mothers. And in this case, taking a mother away from her family right here at home in Massachusetts.
Right. I want to move on and talk quickly about a couple of other things. Congressman Richard Neal of Massachusetts, the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, submitted a formal request to receive 6 years of the president's tax returns from the IRS last week. But that deadline he set has passed. The IRS says they're still working on a response to his request. But President Trump has said that he won't release anything because he says he's under an audit. So here he is speaking on Wednesday.
As you know, I got elected last time with the same issue. And while I'm under audit, I won't do it. If I'm not under audit, I would do it. I had no problem with it. But while I'm under audit, I would not give my taxes.
So Congressman Walton, there he is saying, you know, as you know, I got elected last time with the same issue. And that's a very true statement. I mean, is this going to yield something for the Democrats to get into this fight with Donald Trump about his tax returns? What do you think?
Well, Anthony, your question's political, and I always try to look at just what's the right thing to do for the country.
Yeah.
And constitutionally, we have an obligation in the Congress to put a check on the executive. That's called checks and balances.
Yeah.
That's the way our government is supposed to work. And by law, the president has to give over his tax returns if the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee requests them. That's simply, it applies to every American citizen, whether you're the president or not. So my big question is, what is the president hiding? Well, frankly, why is he so concerned with whether or not he's got an audit going on? I mean, just show us the tax returns. It's not that hard.
Yeah. I want to move on and ask you very quickly about the striking workers. 31,000 unionized Stop and Shop workers are in their first full day of a strike today. What's your message to them?
Stick with it. You know, stick up with for your rights. Wages in America haven't gone up in 20 years. And the good old good jobs that used to be, you know, good paying enough to have a house and support your family and send a kid to college and maybe even go on vacation once a year. So many of those jobs are going away. And yet Wall Street's getting that profit. So there's just a fundamental unfairness right now in our economic system. And one of the ways to help fix that is for workers to organize and stand up for decent pay. That's what they're doing. They're just standing up for making a decent living wage. That used to be part of the contract here in America, that if you worked hard, you could do well. Not you don't have to be rich, but you got to do well. Hmm. You got to do enough. You do well enough to support your family, and that's not the case right now. So I think they're doing the right thing, and I admire them for fighting for their rights.
All right, Congressman Seth Moult of Massachusetts. He represents the state's 6th district. He's in the process of deciding whether or not to run for president. Congressman Moult, it's always great to have you. We look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony.